As we do every Wednesday, a chance to visit with Brian Walton of thecardinalnation.com. Plenty of baseball to get into. As it pertains to the Cardinals, plenty of interest in this offseason. Brian, always great to hear your voice. How are things?
Well, I'm doing fine, Dan. It'd be much more fun if we were still talking about the Cardinals playing in the division series, but the season for them is done as we watch the eight other teams try to make it to the top.
I wanted to get you on, as we do every Wednesday, and talk baseball, but you had a very interesting article about, and really just kind of a personal note about Bob Gibson and what he meant to you. You grew up a Cardinal fan. I know you don't get into your fandom because you're in the media. You write about the game. But you kind of let yourself, if you want to say you let your guard down, if you will, for a moment, to talk about your personal feelings of Bob Gibson. What did Bob mean to you from the fan's perspective of a kid that grew up in, by the way, Omaha, Nebraska, which is where Bob is from?
Yes, I mean, my childhood, we listened to Cardinals games, you know, every day on the radio. And in those days, you know, there wasn't regional cable networks where we could see every game on TV. It was the game of the week on NBC on Saturday afternoon. And more often than not, it was the Yankees and the Red Sox. So, you know, the rare treat where we got to see the Cardinals play, except in the postseason, you know, was rare. But, you know, Bob Gibson, you know, the guy from your hometown and, of course, the most dominant pitcher in his generation, you know, it was just a natural. And I finally got to meet him in 2005 in the backfields in Jupiter one morning, and I wrote a story at that time about it, and I decided to, you know, bring it back 15 years later as I, you know, had the many different emotions as unfortunately Bob Gibson left us. Just, you know, a great Cardinal, a great ambassador of the game. It's just, you know, you just saw the, you know, the outpouring of tributes. I spent a whole morning just reading other articles and watching webcasts and videos, and just, you know, reliving the greatness that was Bob Gibson, not only when he played, but afterward. Very candid about any subject, including steroids, which is one that got me into a little trouble with him. But, you know, just a great, great person, and someone that we'll remember as the greatest St. Louis Cardinals pitcher of all time.
What did you take away from some of the things that you're watching and reading about Gibby that maybe some of our younger listeners would not know?
Well, you know, everybody kind of knows the statistical facts and the, you know, the great season in 68 and lowering the mound. But you just look at his dominance and the number of complete games, you know, going an entire season without being taken out for a relief pitcher. I mean, just some of the incredible feats, you know, playing with a broken leg. I mean, it's just the determination that he had to not lose is something that is talked about in sports up and down, but, you know, tends to become a cliche, right? Everybody's tough. Everybody's gracious. But Bob Gibson, you know, really set the mold for that. And, you know, it took a great man when he retired in 75. He realized he'd got to the point where he couldn't compete at the level that he wanted to and expected to. So, you know, he left the game, I don't know, what, a month early because he just didn't feel he could be himself anymore. And, you know, not a lot of guys do that.
I was trying to think, in last night I was thinking about this in any sport, but certainly in baseball, and this is kind of a tough question for you, but I don't know. I and maybe some of the folks that listen to this would have ideas about it, but if there's something in the sport or any sport that an individual would change, I mean, you've seen in college basketball, they've moved the three-point line back. Because they wanted to do some different things with opening it up, and they wanted to make it tougher. But, you know, an individual that just changes the game so dramatically, and he was one and that told me, he said, look, 68 was a great year for all pitchers. He said, I just kind of became the poster child for it, and we all kind of reflect on it and say, he's the guy that changed the game, which in reality he is. 1.12 is going to do that. But I wonder if there's anything now in sports in 2020 that, in any sport, you'd say, we need to change the game because that guy's so good. I don't know if it's Bryson DeChambeau because he's destroying a golf ball. I don't know. I don't know if there's anybody that you could sit there and say, we need to do something different because this is just too good. This guy's too good at what he does.
Yeah, it's a good question. And it's a fair point also about 16. I mean, Denny McLain won 30 games, right? I mean, nobody's going to win 30 games again based on how pitching is deployed today. Guys barely get 30 starts. So there were definitely other factors going on in the game that they felt they needed to neutralize. But I think the part about Gibson's, you know, dominance that is maybe not completely understood is that know, people thought he was just mean. Well, what he wanted to do was he wanted to own the inside of the plate. And very simple, if you own the inside of the plate, guys can't reach out and handle the balls on the outside of the plate. So, you know, he wasn't out there trying to hit people just to hit them. He was out there because he felt that was the most effective way to get outs. And we don't see that much today, Dan. I mean, you know, pitchers, maybe they can't control their offerings as everybody's trying to throw 100 miles an hour. But, you know, very rarely do we see guys who make a living keeping hitters off the inside of the plate. We've got, everybody's got armor and pads. And, you know, now, we see guys making a living handling the outside pitches.
Yeah.
And in Gibson's day, they wouldn't have been able to do that.
And that leads me to, let's talk about the Cardinals. They come up short in game three. I thought a reason why Jack Flaherty was effective in game three was the fact that he pitched inside. Now, he kept the ball down, but he also was effective because he pitched inside, which is something we did not see in game two from some of the relief corps, at least in my mind, of allowing a couple of different four-run leads get away. Twice the Cardinals had that, and they walked everybody too, which led to crooked numbers. But pitching inside, you know, and we look at it with Bob Gibson, but I thought that Jack Flaherty was able to do that in game three.
I agree, Dan, and there's no reason why the Cardinals shouldn't have won game three. Now, there was obviously a huge letdown because, as you said, that, you know, they had Wainwright on the mound with a 4-0 lead and then a 6-2 lead, and then the bullpen imploded, Gallegos and Cabrera, and everybody knows how that went. But I mean, you know, the Cardinals scored 9 runs in a game. You know, they ought to win. There's no excuse for that. And I think, you know, the offense definitely came out flat in game three. But, you know, Jack Flaherty should have been the winner in that game three. And the Cardinals were positioned in the right place. They had the top, you know, their top guy in the mound and a parade of Padres relievers. And the offense just rolled over. I mean, no runs against 9 different pitchers. It was just a terrible, terrible, disappointing performance in a tough, tough way to end the season.
So what do you think needs to happen with the Cardinals going into this offseason to try to improve the 2021 St. Louis Cardinals offensively?
Well, it's going to be a difficult balance for John Mozeliak. I mean, he talked with us before one of the stories I'm working on right now. You know, he was very candid at the trade deadline saying, hey, you know, we're not adding guys now. We want to see what we have with the outfielders to determine whether we need to go external in the offseason. Well, they need to go external in the offseason. And, you know, as much as it'd be great to go, you know, get a George Springer who hit a couple home runs yesterday, and I think it's 6-for-9 for the Astros in the series, you know, he's not going to be in the Cardinals price range. The Cardinals are in a tough shape payroll wise because of the contracts for Fowler and Carpenter that aren't yet off the books. And they're not guys they can trade. So it's, you know, it's like they're going to have to go make another Ozuna kind of trade where they have to give up depth, pitching and catching are obviously still two areas that they could maybe afford to deal from, and to try to find a bat that has a reasonable salary that they can fit into their structure. And it's not going to be easy, but I think that's what they have to try to do.
We're seeing Randy Arozarena take off with the Tampa Bay Rays. You're a guy, and Brian Walton is our guest, that makes a living off of really covering and diving into the minor leagues and certainly the Cardinals minor league system. Did you see Arozarena? He hit at every level. Did you see him making this kind of immediate impact at the major league level?
Oh, of course not. But I mean, in fairness, we had Randy Arozarena around the, 12th or 13th on our prospect ranking. But, you know, based on results until his final year at AAA, you know, we thought Lane Thomas and Tyler O'Neill, you know, looked like potentially better major league prospects. Although Arozarena, you know, certainly had a very well-balanced game, but it, you know, as the Cardinals made different decisions about outfielders they trade over time, going back to Oscar Mercado, you know, they decided, you know, these are the guys we want to keep and these are the guys we want to trade. And we don't know how the trade went down, whether the Rays, you know, demanded Arozarena or whether the Cardinals made him available. But, you know, based on this very small sample, you know, Randy's, I mean, what is he hitting, like number 3 for Tampa Bay, a team that, you know, won their division and looks like they're going to, you know, continue to push ahead in the playoffs. So, you know, in this very small sample size, it's tough for Cardinals fans to see Randy performing well, knowing, you know, he could have been with St. Louis, but, you know, we'll just have to see.
How about Liberatore, who the Cardinals got back? You know, he's the big lefty. Nolan Gorman's best friend is a childhood friend, and we'll talk about Nolan Gorman in just a moment about his impact. But Liberatore is intriguing to me. I with a lost minor league season, I'm just fascinated to know how and when he could possibly make an impact on the St. Louis Cardinals. Because when you have players that make an impact in the major leagues, people are going to say, well, when's the other side going to get their guy? You know what I mean? You want to trade to work on both ends. So you're sitting there saying, when's Libertor going to make the impact for the Cardinals?
Yeah, and we really don't know, Dan. It's unfortunate that because of COVID and all the things that were going on, the Cardinals were never able to open up alternate camp to any outsiders, whether they be scouts or media. So, you know, while we get reports on everybody, you know, in summer camp in Springfield, we really don't know exactly what was going on. But Libertor and Zach Thompson, we can't, you know, forget about both left-handers are in a position where you would think that they'll either start in Double A next year and move up to Triple A, or maybe even be a Triple A next year and be in, you know, in a position where they could potentially contribute to St. Louis next season. And as I talked about in the last question, you know, the Cardinals may have to trade some pitching depth to get some offensive help. And so these young pitchers that are coming up, that specifically the two you mentioned, are guys that could easily, you know, find themselves in the picture next season.
Yeah, Nolan Gorman is another one that intrigues me too. Cardinals need power. They need slugging. Mike Shildt even talked about it. He said, hey, we're getting guys on base. We're not bringing them in. We're not hitting with the power and the slugging that we need. Nolan Gorman would be one of those guys. In terms of ETA for him, what did you project in a normal season ETA for Nolan Gorman for where he was going to be at this year in the minor leagues, and then what would be the normal trajectory for a guy like Nolan Gorman?
Well, my optimistic, you know, hope for Gorman in 2020, had it been a regular year, would have been a season like Dylan Carlson had last year, right? Play most of the year at Double A, perform well, be recognized, move up, get a taste at Triple A, and then take it from there. Again, we don't know, you know, how his season progressed this year. Certainly it wouldn't be the same experience level as it would have been had he played 144 game season and some playoffs. So, but you know, the Cardinals are positioned another year of Matt Carpenter at third base and Tommy Edman filling in, doing, you know, Tommy Edman things. And, you know, 2021 is going to be a huge pivotal year for Nolan Gorman, because, you know, there's a segment of fans that still want to see the Cardinals, you know, get Nolan Arenado, but that's just not going to happen in the financial world we're living in right now. So, you know, we've got to get through one more year and hope that 2021 Nolan Gorman gets a better grasp on the strike zone, controls those strikeouts, and can, you know, be that next power threat in the middle of the lineup for the Cardinals.
It'll be fascinating this offseason with Yadier Molina and Adam Wainwright. Just your gut feeling with the economics, the budgetary constraints of all baseball, not just the Cardinals, but all baseball, just how you think they approach this situation. What do you think?
Well, I mean, we've seen the last couple of years with Wainwright that Adam's willing to take an incentive-based contract, and so I'm sure that's what they'll work out again. Yadi is going to be a little different because his expectations are, I think, going to be higher. In terms of how much money he gets, and there'll probably be some respect concerns if he doesn't get the kind of deal he wants. I think a one-year deal with mutual options would be the right way to go, and, you know, give him a high enough base that he's satisfied, but also, you know, give him some incentives as well, although not too many incentives, because ideally, you know, in my mind, Yadi would catch 100, 120 games. He wouldn't catch 140 or 150. You know, and you know, I don't care. He's Yadier Molina, but still, eventually, you know, the eighth is going to catch up with him. And so, you know, him, you know, catching another 140 games next year or 150 games is just something that I don't think is going to be a wise thing. I mean, we saw younger men like Paul DeJong sort of, you know, run out of gas for the second year in a row. And I just think, and it, you know, it's a challenge because one of the Cardinals trade chips is clearly Andrew Kisner. So. And Ivan Herrera would be the next guy in line in catching. We don't know how he did this year. He has no AAA experience, so you know he probably wouldn't be ready to step in. So it might be that if they trade Kisner, then they, you know, they bring back the veteran for another year, Matt Wieters, or they go out and get a journeyman until they see if Herrera could be ready.
Hey, Brian, great stuff. What are you working on right now at thecardinalnation.com?
Well, we've done recaps of the pitchers and the hitters in the postseason, you know, looking at the guys who stood out and the guys who disappointed, you know, and unfortunately some of the guys who disappointed, like Hennessy Cabrera, Harrison Bader. I'm going to get into the players that made their playoff debuts and the ones who didn't. We'll get into, as I mentioned, this issue of, you know, what they're going to do in terms of potentially going external for help for the offense. We'll get into free agents, potential free agents, both at the major and minor league level. So a lot of things to write about as we come up before a month or so until we start our next round of prospect rankings.
Great stuff. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Take care, Dan.
That's Brian Walton.